On November 12, 1939, another world broadcast from London. 10 weeks of war.
I thought it would be a good thing for me to tell you tonight how well the war has turned for the Allies during the first 10 weeks. It is only after many vain attempts to remain at peace that we have been at last forced to go to war. We tried again and again to prevent this war, and for the sake of peace, we put up with a lot of things happening which ought not to have happened. But now we are at war, and we are going to make war, and persevere in making war until the other side has had enough of it. We are going to persevere as far as we can, to the best of our ability, which is not small and always growing. The superior quality of our Air Force has been proved, both in pilots and in machines, over the enemy. Our aircraft have shot down 15 German oversea raiders without losing one machine in the combat. Now the mists and storms of winter wrap our island and make the continuous bombing attack of military objectives far more difficult. We have also a marked advantage in the higher range of science applied to war, and this is improving with every week that passes. I do not doubt myself that time is on our side. I go so far as to say that if we come through the winter without any large or important event occurring, we shall in fact have gained the first campaign of the war. And we shall be able to set about our task in the spring far stronger, better organized, and better armed than ever before. Let us therefore bear discomfort and many minor and even perhaps needless vexations. Let us bear them with patience, with understanding patience, because we are all the time moving forward towards greater war strength, and because Nazi Germany is all the time under the grip of our economic warfare, falling back in oil and other essential war supplies. Listeners, a long succession of important events has moved in our favor since the beginning of the war. Italy, which we had feared would be drawn from her historic partnership with Britain and France in the Mediterranean, a partnership which will become increasingly fruitful, has adopted a wise policy of peace. No quarrel has developed between us and Japan. These two great powers, which had joined Nazi Germany in the Anti-Comintern Pact, find it difficult to accommodate themselves to the change of front towards Bolshevism, which Herr Hitler and his bad advisor, Herr von Ribbentrop, those marvelous twin contortionists, have perpetrated. No one can underrate the importance of the Treaty of Alliance between Britain and France with Turkey. The Russian Soviet government, embodied in the formidable figure of Stalin, has barred off once and forever all Nazi dreams of an advance in the East. The left paw of the bear bars Germany from the Black Sea. The right paw disputes with her the control of the Baltic. Whatever history may record about these events, the fact with which we have to reckon is perfectly plain. Nazi Germany is barred off from the East and has to conquer the British Empire and the French Republic or perish in the attempt. It is indeed a solemn moment when I speak to you on this 10th Sunday after the outbreak of war. Solemn. But it is also a moment sustained by resolve and by hope. I am in the singular position of having lived through the early months of the last German war upon Europe in the same position in charge of the British Admiralty as I am now. I am therefore very careful not to say anything of an overconfident or unduly sanguine nature. I am sure we have very rough weather ahead. But I have this feeling, which I must impart to you, that the Germany which assaults us all today is a far less strongly built and solidly founded organism than that which the Allies and the United States forced to beg for armistice 21 years ago. I have the sensation and also the conviction that that evil man over there and his cluster of Confederates are not sure of themselves as we are sure of ourselves, that they are harassed in their guilty souls by the thought and by the fear of an ever-approaching retribution for their crimes and for the orgy of destruction in which they have plunged us all. As they look out tonight from their blatant, clattering, panoplied Nazi Germany, they cannot find one single friendly eye in the whole circumference of the globe. Not one. Russia returns them a flinty glare. Italy averts her gaze. Japan is puzzled and thinks herself betrayed. Turkey and the whole of Islam have ranged themselves instinctively but decisively on the side of progress. The hundreds of millions of people in India and China, whatever their other feelings, would regard with undisguised dread a Nazi triumph, well knowing what their fate would soon be. The great English-speaking republic across the Atlantic Ocean makes no secret of its sympathies or of its self-questioning, and it translates these sentiments into action of a character which anyone may judge for himself. The whole world is against Hitler and Hitlerism. Men of every race and clime feel that this monstrous apparition stands between them and the forward move which is their due and for which the age and times are ripe. Even in Germany itself, there are millions who stand aloof from the seething mass of criminality and corruption constituted by the Nazi party machine. Let them then take courage amid perplexities and perils. For it may well be that the final extinction of a baleful domination will pave the way to a broader solidarity of all the men in all the lands than we ever could have planned if we had not marched together through the fire.